The failure of drug war is glaringly obvious to judges, cops, wardens, prosecutors, and millions more now calling for decriminalization, legalization, the end of prohibition. Let us investigate the Century of Lies.
Hello, and welcome to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. The United Nations Security Council held its 10,080th meeting on December 23rd to discuss threats to international peace and security arising from United States military actions being taken against Venezuela. We're going to hear portions of that meeting on today's show. But first, the third public meeting of the Massachusetts Legislature's Special Commission on Xylazine was held Thursday, December 11th. Commission members heard several presentations that day. One of the experts they heard from was Dr. Matthew Hogan, senior clinical veterinarian at Massachusetts General Hospital, with an overview of xylazine.
So I think you've heard a bit already. It can be administered on its own as a sedative to keep animals calm or if they're nervous or irritated. And a veterinarian or a researcher, animal researchers can also use it to do their procedure or surgery on the animal. It's also often used in combination with narcotics like ketamine to produce an anesthetic state. So where the animal is completely sedated, can't feel pain, and you could do things like intensive imaging or surgery, certainly things like spays and neuters on cats, all the way to like brain surgery that gets conducted on rodents, mice and rats in the research setting. As it says there, licensed veterinarians can utilize it as well as animal researchers who have a Massachusetts Controlled Substance Registration license. Again, we use it alone or in combination in all sorts of species. Everything from little rodents that are used in research or pet rodents all the way up through dogs and cats to farm animals like cattle and sheep and equids like, you know, racing horses or working farm horses. And then why do we use it? So I have in that first bullet there, it's inexpensive. And that's a very big thing in veterinary medicine. There's not a lot of insurance utilized in veterinary pet practice, certainly in the farming industry and equine industry, as well as certainly in the lab animal industry, we're strictly, you know, working off of funds we have. So veterinarians are always trying to find ways to do things effectively and best practice with, you know, sometimes the cheapest things possible. And xylazine is one of those compounds that is inexpensive and easy to obtain and utilize appropriately. It's also reversible. So there's another substance called atipamezole, which is licensed for use in animals, and that reverses the effects quickly of xylazine. So when you have that animal sedated, you're done with your dental work or suturing in something on the animal, you hit them with an injection of the atipamezole and boom, they're up and about again. Also, I talked about the combination of the other anesthetics. So you're using less of a narcotic like ketamine when you combine it with xylazine. And that's always a good thing. If you have wastage of the narcotic, you have to record that, and that becomes an issue, and then you have to report that. And that's just a better practice in most of our eyes. Also, you think about a horse in a field that's got an injury. It's easy to bring a xylazine out in a syringe and stick it in the horse, calm them down, repair them, or get them calm enough to put them on a truck and send them to a clinic, as opposed to like using gases or, again, using narcotics, which, you know, you'd have to record and you're really not supposed to be transporting from the site where the license is registered. And then finally, we only obtain a xylazine from legally, federally licensed distributors. And I have some of them listed there that many of the veterinarians in the state utilize. I'll touch on a couple of the findings here. The first one is really finding number two. Xylazine as a whole, so most vet practice in Massachusetts is small animal, so dogs and cats, you know, your typical neighborhood practice. Those folks are using less xylazine and more of some of the other substances I have listed in finding three there, which we'd call homogeneous substances that are very similar. Metatomidine, dexmedetomidine, rimifidine. I don't know if those are found in illicit use situations or addictive situations in humans, but those are some of the ones we're using legally as well. But xylazine is utilized quite a bit by large animal veterinarians, farm animal vets, equine vets, and certainly in my realm, which is laboratory animal medicine, it is used every day on a daily basis, you know, as a sedative or in combination as an anesthetic.
That was Dr. Matthew Hogan, senior clinical veterinarian at Massachusetts General Hospital. He presented an overview of xylazine to the Massachusetts Legislature's Special Commission on Xylazine at its third public meeting on Thursday, December 11th. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Now to our main story. The 10,080th meeting of the United Nations Security Council was held December 23rd to discuss threats to international peace and security arising from United States military actions being taken against Venezuela. Mohammed Khaled Khayari, Assistant Secretary General for the Middle East, Asia, and the Pacific, briefed the Council.
The United States military presence and operations in the Southern Caribbean, off of the coast of Venezuela, have increased since this Council last discussed the situation on 10th of October, further heightening tensions between the two countries. The United States described its military deployment as part of a, quote, non-international armed conflict, end quote, against drug cartels and drug trafficking, invoking Article 51 of the Charter of the United Nations. President Donald Trump has stated that he is going to use the full power of the United States to take on and eradicate these drug cartels, no matter where they are operating from. The Venezuelan government, including its permanent representative, has described the measures by the United States as a serious threat to international peace and security. Most recently, in a letter dated 16 December and addressed to the President of the Security Council, the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Venezuela asserted that the United States is violating the principle prohibiting the threat or use of force in international relations. Mr. President, U.S. strikes on vessels alleged to be illegally carrying drugs in the Southern Caribbean Sea and the Eastern Pacific have continued. According to United States authorities, 105 individuals have been killed in these strikes since 2 September. Officials have stated that the strikes have taken place in international waters or in the Southcom area of responsibility. The exact locations of these incidents have not been disclosed. In a statement on 31st October, the High Commissioner for Human Rights said that the airstrikes by the United States of America on boats in the Caribbean and the Pacific allegedly linked to drug trafficking, violate international human rights law. The High Commissioner added that countering illicit trafficking of drugs across international border is, as has long been agreed among states, a law enforcement matter governed by the careful limits on lethal forces set out in international human rights law. He called for prompt, independent, and transparent investigations. Mr. President, in late November, President Nicolas Maduro and President Trump held a telephone conversation. On 24th November, the United States designation of the Cartel de los Soles as a foreign terrorist organization entered into force under U.S. law. Subsequently, the United States imposed additional measures against organizations and individuals it alleges are linked to these activities. On 29 November, President Trump declared that the airspace above and around Venezuela should be considered closed in its entirety. This followed an alert issued by the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration a few days earlier, warning major airlines of a potentially hazardous situation when flying over Venezuela. Since then, most international airlines have suspended or canceled flights to and from the country. Venezuelan authorities have described this as an attempt to impose an air blockade. The International Civil Aviation Organization issued a statement on 1st of December recalling that, and I quote, Article 1 of 1944 Convention of International Civil Aviation recognizes that every state has complete and exclusive sovereignty over the airspace above its territory, end of quote. The statement further noted, and I quote, any state can issue any information to its own operators regarding risks for flights over or in proximity of any geographic zones, including of another state, end of quote. On 10 December, tensions increased further when President Trump announced that the United States had seized an oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela, stating that the government of Venezuela was using oil to finance criminal activities. He also declared that, and I quote, the Venezuelan regime has been designated a foreign terrorist organization under United States law and ordered the total and complete blockade of all sanctioned oil tankers going into and out of Venezuela, end of quote. Subsequently, the United States authorities imposed sanctions on 6 shipping companies operating in Venezuela's oil sector and 6 vessels allegedly associated with these companies, which the U.S. claims have engaged in deceptive and unsafe shipping practices. Venezuelan authorities described these actions as a unilateral naval blockade. In identical letters dated 17 December and addressed to the Secretary General and the President of Security Council, the permanent representative of Venezuela stated that the U.S. actions violate Venezuela's national sovereignty, territorial integrity, and political independence. The letter further asserted that the naval blockade imposed unilaterally constitutes a violation of international law. In recent days, reports indicate that the Venezuelan Navy has been escorting ships departing its ports with petroleum products. On 20 December, the United States interdicted another tanker off the coast of Venezuela that was transporting oil from Venezuela. According to a United States announcement, the vessel was suspected of carrying oil subject to sanction under U.S. laws. On 20 December, U.S. Coast Guard pursued a third oil tanker off the coast of Venezuela. Reportedly, the ship did not submit to boarding during the attempted interdiction and continued sailing away from the Caribbean Sea. U.S. actions have received support from some regional allies, but other member states within and beyond the region have voiced concern over the militarization of the Southern Caribbean and stressed the importance of respecting national sovereignty and international law. Several member states have echoed call for de-escalation and dialogue to address ongoing tensions. Mr. President, Excellencies, in September, citing external threats, President Maduro enacted a decree expanding the government's emergency powers. Public life has become further militarized, while Venezuelans continue to face serious human rights concerns and socioeconomic challenges. The UN Human Rights Office reported coerced enlistment into the Bolivarian militia, including adolescents and older persons. The High Commission has also reported on sweeping restrictions on freedom of expression and peaceful assembly, arbitrary detention and enforced disappearances, as well as acute social and economic strain. He called for an immediate end of enforced disappearances, incommunicado detention, and unauthorized transfers of detainees to unknown locations. The High Commissioner further reiterated the disproportionate impact of broad sectoral sanctions on Venezuela's most vulnerable populations, noting that these measures also hinder the work of human rights and humanitarian organizations. He called for the sanctions to be reassessed and lifted. Venezuela's economy was already extremely fragile, with soaring inflation, currency instability, and widespread income erosion. Millions are unable to meet basic needs. Recent air and maritime restrictions, along with reduced exports, risk further constraining the government's fiscal ability to deliver basic public services. As the humanitarian situation deteriorates, the United Nations and its partners continue to work and deliver assistance in support of the Venezuelan people, including through recent financial allocations of the United Nations Central Emergency Response Fund and the Venezuela Humanitarian Fund. Mr. President, on 17 December, at his request, President Maduro held a telephone conversation with the Secretary General. The Secretary General reaffirmed the United Nations position on the need for member states to respect international law, particularly the United Nations Charter, exercise restraint, and de-escalate tensions to preserve regional stability. The Secretary General stands ready to support all efforts at diplomatic engagement, including the exercise of his good offices, if both parties so request it. He welcomes initiatives by member states, offers for mediation, and proposals for peaceful solutions. Dialogue is the only viable path toward lasting peace and preventing further instability and human suffering. Thank you, Mr. President.
That was Mohammed Khaled Kiari, Assistant Secretary General for the Middle East, Asia, and the Pacific, briefing the UN Security Council on December 23rd. You're listening to Century of Lies. I'm your host, Doug McVeigh. Let's hear interventions by some of the national delegates at that December 23rd Security Council meeting. First, here's the representative of Colombia.
Mr. President, I'd like to thank Assistant Secretary General Kiari for his valuable briefing. The recent military activities carried out by the United States in the Caribbean Sea, as well as the public statements made at the highest level by the government of the United States, are generating tensions in a region which up to now has been characterized by stability and peaceful coexistence. Latin America and the Caribbean have been proclaimed as a zone of peace based on clear principles, the prohibition of the threat or the use of force, the peaceful resolution of disputes, promotion of dialogue and multilateralism, strict respect for sovereignty and territorial integrity, a non-interference into the internal affairs of states, and the inalienable rights of peoples to self-determination. The escalation of actions of a military character not only increases the risk of a greater conflict, but also, while it's contrary to international law, also undermines collective efforts to prevent conflict and undermines regional stability. Colombia rejects categorically any threat of the use of force and the use of this as a means to resolve disputes. These actions, as well as unilateral coercive measures that do not align with the United Nations Charter, nor with the decisions of this body, erode the rule of law and cannot be a substitute for dialogue, preventive diplomacy, or the mechanisms for the peaceful resolution of disputes, which should be a priority in any actions between states. Mr. President, Colombia is fully conscious that transnational organized crime, including drug trafficking, is a significant threat for peaceful and inclusive societies. This should be an opportunity to highlight the fact that Colombia has demonstrated a sustained and verifiable commitment to the fight against the illicit trafficking of narcotics and other forms of transnational crime, as evidenced by the record figures of seizures and joint operations carried out in strict adherence to international law and the principles of proportionality and necessity and respect for human rights. With this in mind, we'd like to make an appeal to strengthen cooperation and regional and international coordination in a way that's consistent with the principle of common and shared responsibility and in the framework of the relevant legal and international agreements. Based on this, this should be done with the goal of building a safe and stable environment for the benefit of our peoples and thus to combat, in strict compliance with international obligations, against all manifestations of transnational criminal activity. In no case should we allow for extrajudicial responses to activities of transnational organized crime and or attacks against the civilian population and against civilian assets. The silence in the face of actions that threaten international peace and security do not contribute to the de-escalation or the protection of the most vulnerable. Any action or the lack of it that is not geared towards peace should not remain unseen by this council, which has the responsibility of raising its voice and promoting actions that are consistent with its mandate of maintaining international peace and security. Colombia reiterates its firm commitment to defending peace, stability, democracy, and the development of the region, because we're convinced that only through mutual respect, strict adherence to international law, multilateral cooperation, and dialogue will we build lasting solutions. Combating transnational organized crime must be carried out exclusively based on strict adherence to relevant international norms without resorting to extrajudicial actions or interpretations that seek to justify the use of force outside the conditions enshrined in the Charter. Therefore, with this in mind, we urge all parties to act responsibly, with restraint, and with the political will of upholding the United Nations Charter and resorting to mediation and dialogue, including possibly facilitated by our region, as the only valid way of resolving their disputes. Thank you.
That was the representative of Colombia. Now here's the representative of Chile, Her Excellency Ambassador Paula Narvaez.
Mr. President, Chile would like to express its profound concern regarding the deployment of military action in the Caribbean and reject any armed activity that could put at risk the stability and peace of the region. These considerations recall the need to respect international law, territorial integrity and sovereignty, peaceful resolution of disputes, the prohibition of the threat of the use of force, and respect for international law. Chile would like to also underscore the urgent need to continue undertaking coordinated efforts to confront transnational organized crime, as well as our conviction that Latin America and the Caribbean must continue to be a zone of peace. My country has always been consistent in its position. Chile does not recognize the legitimacy of the current regime led by Mr. Nicolas Maduro. Due to the absence of democratic conditions, electoral guarantees, and full respect for the rule of law. At the same time, we reaffirm that our position is always geared towards the defense, the protection of the Venezuelan people, whose rights and dignity must be placed at the center of any international considerations. The context of tensions that we're observing should not make us forget the prolonged deterioration of the institutions, the restrictions on political and civic rights, and the lack of effective opportunities for democratic participation. In addition to that, there's a grave humanitarian and migratory crisis that has become one of the most serious sources of displacement in the contemporary world. Millions of Venezuelans have been forced to abandon their country in seeking security, basic needs, covering their basic needs and opportunities, forcing host countries to meet their needs, including our country. In this context, Chile would like to specifically stress the risks that would accompany any military escalation or armed conflict. A confrontation such as this would have devastating humanitarian consequences. It would only deepen the suffering of the civilian population and would further aggravate the process of displacement, insecurity, and vulnerability. Any dispute should be dealt with exclusively through peaceful means. In strict adherence to international law, the sovereignty of states, and the prohibition of the use or the threat the use of force. Mr. President, in the face of this complex scenario, Chile considers the role of multilateral mechanisms of dialogue on prevention to be very valuable. In this spirit, we particularly view the role of the United Nations and in particular the role that could be played by the Secretary General and this Council, with the consent of the parties, to contribute to the reducing tensions and seeking understandings that favor a political and sustainable solution, a peaceful and sustainable solution. Prudent leadership and the experience accumulated by our organization could be important in preventing a deterioration of the situation and maintaining the channels of communication open. Mr. President, our conviction is clear. The challenges confronting Venezuela do not have a military solution. They can only be tackled through peaceful processes that are gradual and inclusive, that consider the legitimate aspirations of the Venezuelan people and give priority to the protection of the civilian population. Chile reiterates its readiness to support constructive initiatives that point in this direction and to work together with the countries of the region and the international community for the benefit of stability, mutual understanding, and respect for the principles that sustain this organization. Thank you.
That was the representative of Chile, Her Excellency Ambassador Paula Narvaez. Finally, here's the representative of Brazil, His Excellency Ambassador Sergio Franca Denis.
Brazil is a firm promoter and defender of the UN Charter, of multilateralism, and peaceful solution of disputes. We're also a neighbor and friend of Venezuela, with whom we share a long land border and strong historical, social, and economic links. As on all questions dealt with by this Council, the imperative principle guiding its action should be the UN Charter of the United Nations, in particular its principles and provisions on international peace and security. Among these principles, the Charter establishes a legally binding obligation of not using or threatening to use force against the territorial integrity or the political independence of any state without prejudice to Article 51 pertaining to the right to legitimate defense. These principles and provisions are binding for all member states. They do not allow exceptions based on ideological, geopolitical, political, economic, or any other kind of interests or projects. Nor do they admit exceptions related to complaints or claims of one state against another that should be resolved peacefully, including by turning to the International Court of Justice, which is the main judicial organ of the United Nations. They're also incompatible with the charters, any disruption in international commerce by a member state through the use or the threat of the use of force without the due and formal authorization of this council. As has the government of Brazil has underscored continually, unilateral coercive measures do not have a basis in the UN Charter, and even less justification to be implemented, these measures to be implemented through the use or through the use of force. Solutions based on force are completely contrary to the best tradition of irreversible and firm course for peace adopted by Latin America and the Caribbean. We are and we want to continue to be a region of peace, respectful of international law, and good relations among neighbors. Mr. President, in view of the aforementioned, the military force deployed and maintained by the United States off the coast of Venezuela and the recently declared naval blockade are violations of the UN Charter. Therefore, it should cease immediately and unconditionally in favor of the use of political and legal instruments which are broadly available. Brazil urges both countries to engage in genuine dialogue in good faith and without coercion. As President Lula has already publicly stated, his government will be ready to cooperate and, if necessary, with the mutual consent of the United States and Venezuela. Brazil is also ready to support any effort by the Secretary General to this end. The issue that brings us together today is not only of concern to countries of Latin America and the Caribbean, it concerns the entire international community because, ultimately, an outbreak of a conflict in the region could have global repercussions. It is the responsibility of the Security Council, of all its members, and all the states yearning for peace to work tirelessly, without fear or other kind of motivations, to ensure that the disputes that we're discussing today are resolved peacefully. Thank you.
That was a representative of Brazil, His Excellency Ambassador Sergio Franca Denis. He was one of the speakers at a UN Security Council meeting December 23rd, where they discussed threats to international peace and security posed by the United States. And for now, that's it. Thank you for joining us. We'll be back in a week with 30 more minutes of news and information about drug policy and the failed war on drugs. For now, this is Doug McVeigh.
For the Drug Truth Network, this is Doug McVeigh asking you to examine our policy of drug prohibition, the century of lies. Drug Truth Network programs archived at the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy.